Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world.
All right, welcome to another edition of Critical Issues, where we talk about the issues of today and bring about solutions and talk about how we can bring the solution to these problems that affect everyday lives. I'm Henry Hasib, and we have Dr. Jamal Rashid with us here, and we're going to continue the subject that we started last week on the examination of Facebook culture. And you know that's one of those social medias that we have out here, ways that we communicate. Of course, there's others out here too, but they all fit in the same category. So at this time, we'll bring Dr. Jamal Rashid. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Henry. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. Brothers and sisters in the American Muslim 360 Block Radio listening audience, we greet you with the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. You know, we're moving into a new world that Imam Muhammad, Rahimahullah, advised us of in the very beginning of his leadership with a lot of new language, a culture, you know, is a language. There are many definitions for culture. And one of the growing advanced cultures that the world has undergone in recent decades has been phenomenal. You know, we who are living in this day and time have witnessed a phenomenal change in communications or language. On, I think as you mentioned last week, Brother Henry, from, you know, it's been so long ago, Morse code, you know, or even the beating of a drum is words of communication. Listening to any of our, or let's say, getting message from any one of our five senses are words. You know, we smell, that brings a message. We taste, that brings a message. We hear, that brings a message. We see, it brings a message. And I think, if I haven't said feel, it brings a message. So all of our five senses are designed innately, or what we say naturally, to bring messages to our mind. And that's how we grow and develop. And so in recent years, that we now say decades, there's been a phenomenal change. And when we understand that in our creation, everything is dualistic, that means that there's a pattern of pairs, of dualistic aspects, where it can be one way or another. Information itself is dualistic. We know the benefits. You know, as we say benefits, they come from positive information. But in contrast, unfortunately, there are hardships or what we call detrimental aspects or perspectives when we get wrong or immoral information. So we see how life can be when we have insights, that is to see above or beyond the physical. We be able to recognize things that are constantly evolving, constantly growing, and that's why we say that education is more and goes far beyond academics. So, you know, there's a lot of insight to be gathered or obtained and then maintained in order to produce. We are at advantages when we have academic intelligence. So we're not denouncing or deleting, if you will. Delete is a word that we often hear in this new culture or this new language. We're not deleting information or what we call artificial intelligence or academic intelligence. Well, we know that academically, if a person is not properly prepared academically, then we know that that person is at a disadvantage. And so we see the importance of academic intelligence. But just like academic intelligence is important, so is intelligence beyond academics or the physical. And so Facebook is a community in itself. It is a what they call social component, has the opportunity to be positive if it is implemented positively, or when we say in a correct manner, if it uses moral intelligence as its guide or its leader, then social intelligence is a very positive aspect of life. But in contrast, understanding the dualistic nature of what we have spoken of briefly is that the social component of Facebook is not properly implemented, then it can be a deterrent. It can be a hindrance or a negative vibe, if you will, of growth and development. Instead of growing and developing and producing, it can do just the exact opposite. And so we know through examination, when we examine the values, and values are things that are important, values can be positive or negative. So again, we're basically breaking down all the components of what makes a society what it is. And obviously, values are very important, things that are important by its inheritors or people that reside within this cultural setting. And so when we understand the values of Black America, and notice I say Black America versus Africans who are born in America, because there is a distinction of the values of what we call enslaved Negroes. And so we go into various definitions. And when we understand in definition, all words are first defined or described by definition. What is that which we perceive is a meaning, is a definition. And so whatever our minds come up with, that is, whatever we define as a meaning, that is a definition. And so as enslaved Negroes is what I'm defining as Black America. The values have been, what we may say, have been, for the most part, what we want to say, the 80-20 rule. What is the 80-20 rule? Or let's reverse it and say, what is the 20-80 rule? Instead of the 80-20, let's go just to reverse and say 20-80. We have 20% of strivers, those that strive, those that succeed, those that excel, versus 8%. Or the 80% that are struggling or that are really having a difficult time surviving. And so we have used that formula to describe Black America leadership. Now, some people may say this goes into the Islamic organization that we call Imams. But we also might say that may also describe a community that Imams may reside over. And so when we look at Facebook and understanding the values of what's important, I described years ago, decades now, that the values of Black America are centered around food, sex, entertainment, gossip, and foolishness. Food, sex, entertainment, gossip, and foolishness. And some people may say there are a few other things that are important to Black America, as we have defined Black America as a surviving 8% out of 10, 8 out of 10, struggling, whereas only 2 out of 10 are strivers or excelling. So when we look at that percentage of those that are somewhat connected to Facebook, a book of faces, you may say, we see that it is overwhelmingly centered around the value of what Black Americans or Black Americans feel important. And so we see a lot of social connections, which is good. We are a social creature. And so people are doing the very best they can with what they know to communicate, but only on a social, let's say, uninformed connection. Because Facebook could also be utilized in a much more beneficial communicator, or what we may say communications, where it can share very powerful insights or information without being angered, and when we say angered, now we are entering dysfunctional emotions. So let's back up and say Facebook, a social unit, can be very promising, very appealing, have an advantage if it is implemented with emotional intelligence, that is, without fear, which is another emotion that is detrimental. Because understanding the dualistic aspects again of all creations, the emotionality also is comprised of both positives and negatives. So when we understand that emotionality is inputted in a negative aspect, then it can be detrimental in its applications. It can be detrimental. And so this is what we're describing as Black America, not utilizing Facebook most advantageous instrument that can be obtained and maintained in this modern-day culture. So we see a lot of social vibes, a lot of people who share what other people say, not what they say from their own intellect. That's visibly missing, obviously missing, where people will share their own insights. They basically are sharers of other people's products. And that's good if what they share have positive applications or implementations. That's a good thing, but it's also a negative in the aspect that we are too dependent on outside forces versus on ourselves. You remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, one of the most influential sound bites was, and is, do for self. That has tremendous implications. Do for self will resonate from here until you can't see beyond. Do for self is a natural implication of maturity or growth to excel, that which is an attribute of what we consider femininity or masculinity, if it's male, what we call growth and development. And so there's aspects that I'm outlining on what Facebook can be compared to what it is. And so that's our topic for this morning, the continuation from last week. And Brother Henry, I'm going to yield at this time. If you have a comment or question, then do so, sir. Or we can go to our
yes,
first.
Yeah, I did. I want to bring something into the subject before we take our first break here. Is that as you was talking in Facebook and like we say, it's other medias too. I was going back in my mind to the word teach. You know, we have when our youngsters are young, we say they're being taught, and they're being taught by a teacher. And the job of the person who's being taught or the teacher that's teaching is to get that person that they're giving the knowledge to learn. And the person who learned the knowledge, well, they accept it. And this is still dealing with Facebook because it's the same thing. We may not call Facebook a teacher, but the fact of the matter is it does. We're learning from everything we do. And as you say, it's not only physical words that we do. We're picking up all kinds of things from the environment. And once we learn this, then we say we become educated. You know, and that's and when we become educated, a lot of times as adults, we say we are educated in a certain field, mechanics, engineering, or whatever it is. So even though we're talking about this Facebook and the damage that it also can do, as you say, we have a duality in everything. That's just a reality that we have to face, and that everything except our Creator is in a duality form, that it's got the potential for good and it's got the potential for bad. And it's just sad that in this society, we tend to go more toward the bad than we do the good. And that's why we're having to talk about the things like the Facebook culture. but it's a new way, and there's still going to be new ways of communicating or learning or teaching, because that's what the human being does. We always say that the physical body, the human, is inside of this body. And that meaning that learning mechanism that is going to learn, that's going to teach, and that's going to become educated. And it's the proper education that we got to begin to focus on, because we, as you say, a black people are a African that was put into slavery here in America. We know when we trace our history that we have not been taught properly. We have not, and those things that we have learned and we think we are educated on now, we are given to the broader society, which is causing a bigger and bigger and bigger problem. I know in the first experience that we had, and we're going to take our break in a minute, but we used to say, how do you expect a person who don't treat you right to teach you right? And that was something that should have made us think. If you treating me bad, how can I expect you to give me good information that's going to stop you from treating me bad? So, but it seemed that the abused have become a bigger abuser than the abused. So let's take a break right here, and we're going to invite our listeners that if you do have a question or comment, then press 1 on your phone, and we will be right back after these brief break here. We'll be right back.
The peace be on you.
This is Isaiah Abdushakur, now with the Islam's beliefs universal. Allah is the creator with no partners. Muslims have 99 popular attributes for Allah. What is Al-Islam? Al-Islam is the complete way of life that reflects submission to the will of God. Islam means submission, derived from the Arabic word meaning peace. Who is a Muslim? A Muslim is anyone who submits to the will of God. Everyone is born Muslim, and their environment makes them otherwise. How does one become a conscious Muslim? To become Muslim is to make a public declaration that there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. This is called the Shahadatain. Who is Muhammad? Muhammad the Prophet was born in Mecca, the holiest city to Islam in Arabia, in the year 570 or in the 6th century. How many Muslims are there? Worldwide, there are just over 1 billion Muslims, or 1 out of every 5 people on earth is a Muslim. In the United States, there are approximately 8 million Muslims. 2.5 million are recognized as indigenous, with the remainder by the way of immigration. Aren't all Muslims Arabs? No. Most Muslims live east of Karachi. 30% of Muslims live in the Indian subcontinent, 20% in sub-Sahara Africa, 17% in Southeast Asia, 18% in the Arab world, 10% in the states of the former Soviet Union or Russia. There is a significant Muslim population in China, Latin America, and Australia. Aren't all Arabs Muslim? No.
Okay. We are back. Again, if anyone have a question or comment on our topic this morning, examination of Facebook culture.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just talking, and we were on. I was on mute, Dan. But anyway, what I was saying was, in that PSA, we were being taught, and when we internalized what was information and the communication that was being taught to us, then we learn. And then after we have learned it, then we become educated to this. Now, if it's good information, then we can, from this education, go and teach others and do it. And, you know, we have in our religion that, hey, even when you learn one ayat, then go and share that or teach that to others there. So I just wanted to mention that. It looked like that was a very appropriate PSA for what we're talking about today. But we have to look at the other side of this, because sometimes, Dr. Rashid, when I look at Facebook, some of the stuff I see on that, you know, I have to stop it. Where is this taking me? You know, this ain't where I want to go. The information, the knowledge that's being shared on there is not what I want to put into my mind to learn, and I definitely don't want to be the one to be educated in this to go to teach that to others. So I just wanted to add that to this conversation. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, alaykum as-salam. Okay, so again, if anyone have a question or comment on our topic this morning, Facebook, what is your opinion or your common concerns about how it is utilized? Is it sufficient? Or is it more detrimental as a means of communication? Or is it harmful? I'd like to just know your opinion, because many of you are not on it, and it is, in my opinion, more harmful. And I would describe why I define it as more harmful, because it requires intelligence to operate in this culture of what we call Facebook. You cannot be a uninformed participant, because you can be easily exploited. Easily by what we call predators. And we know the word definition of a predator, one who prey, P-R-E-Y, on the uninformed, or when we say the weaker component, is a one who takes advantage. And many people use this instrument to actually find a mate. Can you believe that's where our society has ventured into? Whereas it was much safer years ago, that's run into decades, where if you were obviously in the dating process, wanting to connect as a social unit, we relied heavily on the environment in which we reside in, of who you knew, even if you wasn't in the immediate environment. You connected with someone you knew as a referral, someone who could refer you to, I know this person. I can vouch for this person. So again, someone, you of the people that we have online, raise your hand and give us your Facebook or another social media in which we are on right now. The advantages that we have where we can communicate nationwide. Very rare do we have people call it internationally, but we do know that people are communicating nationally in what we call the United States of America. So what are the advantages?
Dr. Rashid, we do have a caller in queue when you get ready. I think our brother Mark Shaheed.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Yes. Assalamu alaikum, brother Mark.
Alaikum assalam, brother Henry Hasib and Dr. Jamal Rashid, and to your very astute radio listening audience, the AM 360 radio, Mark Shaheed from the STL, Gateway City of St. Louis in the Show Me State of Missouri. I want to say alhamdulillah that the praise and the thanks belongs to God, first and foremost, always. And excellent production. I didn't get an opportunity last week to hear, I guess this is part two on this, in terms of how we see social media, and you were mentioning about Facebook, and I was just listening to the information that you were disseminating, Dr. Jamal and Brother Henry, and a great question. What I know and remember, I like to always go back to the origin, and maybe last week you perhaps already talked about it, but when you assess or evaluate something, you have to always go back to the intent. The intent. This is something that we have to always remember from a Islamic base. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, all matters and actions are evaluated, or they judge, as Imam say, by your niyyah, or your intention, your pure intention. And I just think personally that when Facebook first came out, it had good intent, and the objectivity actually was a validation for the good intention, because then you look at the results. It was like Facebook, you know, so you look at what it's saying, Facebook, you know, as you were talking earlier, words are containers of ideas. And so when you look at the word will give you the idea, the concept of Facebook. And when it first came out, it was an aid, an assistance, a benefit for those who may have lost contact. You know, so we are social beings, lost contact maybe with family members, maybe with old classmates, maybe friends, lost contact. And so you were able to maybe, say, discover where that person actually was or what through Facebook. And then there was, as both of you said, there was some good things and benefits that came out in terms of Facebook by good posting on Facebook. So then we can see the positive, the value, the benefit in this concept originally. But then the door is open for then the negative things to come to Facebook. Those things that that should be personal and private. So what are we saying here? We're talking, and you said it so very well earlier, here on Solutions for Critical Issues, our principles and our values come to the forefront, that is constructed in society, what it is that's being disseminated, being given to people in that regard. And some of these things that come across Facebook, now that I'm here, I mean, I'm not able to actually read anymore or see those things, as I'm legally blind, but I'm able to see, have the insight to be able to see that some of those things should be censored and not be allowed to come across Facebook and just any type of posting in that regard, because it does have influence and impact on people. And one of the things that we have to really safeguard in the society is the influences. That word influence is a word that we should really look at. How is that influencing or impacting our young people in terms of their thinking? Words make people. And as you so eloquently articulated earlier, Dr. Jamal, you know, the five senses of faculties, you know, all of these are receptors to intake words. And if they're positive words, it can produce positive thoughts. And positive thoughts actually can produce positive actions. And those actions repeated over and over again, you know, we look at becoming a habit, and then, you know, from habit, it becomes part of our character, and then it leads to a destiny. So we've seen positive things, but we've seen negative things too. And so not censoring these things, even in social media, you know, before you had that, you went back to the first social institution, which is family life. So what was being taught in most of the family life was positive things. And the family next door was teaching their children positive things out of the neighborhood and then the community. Positive things. But we can't say that today. We can't say it in the human society all the time that positive things are being taught. And so we're not seeing positive and good behavior in all. It's almost a rarity now to see children that are respectful, mannerable and respectful. And, you know, displaying decency, which is a part of the original nature. I don't want to talk too long because I know there might be other people that want to have something to say, but this is a very, very good topic, a very good topic, and we can see the influence of words and see what it is that Imam Muhammad has said, that words do make people. And is what they make, words is what it makes them do, what it makes them do. Mm-hmm. Are we getting enough positive words, you understand, whereas that we're doing positive things, or are we getting more negative words? And words are containing ideas, and these ideas are coming into the head, and we're seeing the things that obviously that we detest more in society. I could say more, but I think I said enough. I'll stop there. I want to thank you, Dr. Jamal, and you, Instructor Henry Hasib, for having this production on AM360 in this platform. It's so very thought-provoking. I always enjoy listening in every opportunity I get. Thank you, and may Allah continue to bless you and us. As-salamu alaikum.
As-salamu alaikum. And I just wanted to... And give an example of what Mark Shahid was just saying. We were on a cruise not long ago, and we were in the dining room. My wife and I were sitting down eating some lunch in the dining room. And there was four young men, I believe it was, that were sitting sort of just across from us, but not too far from him. I didn't really understand the conversation, but they looked like four intelligent. They looked like really four intelligent human beings. And but we were eating, so as we got ready to leave, my wife stopped, and she was telling me, I thought because that was the picture that I had formed in my mind. It looked like, you know, somebody gonna, young people gonna be something one day. That's what I had kind of thought. And but she stopped, and she spoke to him for a few minutes, maybe talked to him for about 3 or 4 minutes. And I thought she was giving encouragement, so I came in the conversation. I gave further conversation to him and telling him how valuable they are to our future. And then I asked him, I said, well, what did you tell him? She said, I had to tell him about the profanity that they were using. So they just got outrageous with it. I said, wow, I thought you were giving them encouragement, and that's why I was good. She said, no, I told them how disrespectful, that they should be more respectful around at least respect, you know, other people, and especially their elderly. Say they were just using profanity like, it, you know, like it's everyday language. I said, wow, I wasn't aware of that. I thought you was giving them encouragement. So that's an example of what you were saying, Mark, about how it is. You looked at them. I mean, they looked very intelligent to me. I thought, I mean, these, just looking at them from first sight, you would think, well, these young men, they're going to be our future, which they are. But it's not the future that we want. But it's the culture of the language that they're using out here. And so, as we say, Facebook started out, I believe, with good intentions and all, but now it has been taken, captured, to now put too much derogatory. I think, as Dr. Rashid said, the 2080 there. Now it's 80, it looks like it's 80% bad and 20% good. And we have to work to try to reverse that back to the natural way things should be. And Dr. Rashid also, and I know that will be another subject, is what's moving on scene now is this thing called artificial intelligence that we'll have to talk about one day too. But we do have another caller on the line, so we want to bring them in, and I'll bring them in. All right, we have area code 914-434. Welcome to the program. And this is Brother Muhammad.
Yes, this is Muhammad.
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Muhammad.
Okay, wa alaykum as-salam. Is you, Henry, man, Dr. Rashid? Yeah, you know.
Yes.
Looking at Facebook, look like we almost have another community out of the Imam Debbie Muhammad community on Facebook. You know?
Yes.
It should be an advantage. Mm-hmm. I leave it at that one word. It should be an advantage where people who use common sense should be able to recognize intelligent common sense. Just short words on how we should be able to be recognized in the world community. If we use universal language, now we can turn people off by being too Islamic. And what I mean by that, we can't just drown people with Islamic terminology that we know they don't understand, because then they will be offended and turned off, because now they think that you're trying to indoctrinate them or force something down that they're not ready to accept. They're willing to come and meet us in common language of decency and righteousness. But if you constantly using a lot of this instead of saying the most gracious, compassionate, or the most, you know, any of the natural attributes, they can understand that language. So you don't have to be overbearing. But some of us don't know how to use strategic insights on how to communicate. And so when you say that the social intelligentsia is used as a natural community of informed intelligence, then yes, it is. It can be used very wisely if we become wise instructors. I think someone mentioned teachers. I think it was you, Brother Henry, mentioned the word teachers. You know, when we become wise instructors, then we can use the social media as a very informed component in this world that's fastly growing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Muhammad, did you have anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, yeah, I guess I would add that, you know, sometimes we ask, where's that brother? Haven't heard him in a long while. Yeah, where you go? That sister. Haven't heard that sister in a long while. Where you go? They on Facebook. They're not on any blog, talk radio, no conference calls or nothing. You're on Facebook.
Well, you can find them on Facebook. Well, and you're right. It is, and it's just one of many that's out there. And as long as it's for good, you know, I can support it. But it's just that, like we say, that duality, that it almost supports what the Christian try to say, that you're born in sin, you know, because they just do so much sinful, although we know better. But they look like they try to enforce that concept of just seeing how vulgar and nasty that some of them could be, because some of the stuff they put on there. But they do still have good stuff on Facebook. And, you know, I look at it sometimes to get recipes off of it, and they turn out to be pretty good recipes, some of them. I wish they had a bean pie recipe on there so I could pick up making some bean pie. But we do appreciate that that comment, Brother Muhammad, and we do have another caller on that we want to get to here before we run out. Let's push the good and try to work against this bad force that's out here. All right, we're going to bring in our next caller at area code 706-627. Welcome to the program. State your name, where you calling from.
This is Brother Muhammad from the Ummah Prophet Muhammad, by the way, of Columbus, Georgia. Thank a lot for your service this morning. But again, like you said, it's going to come a time where we already there and been there for a while now, where we are supposed to be a model. As you know, a model doesn't say anything. It shows every day, or whoever comes to see what Allah has done for them, you know, what Allah is doing for them, you know, and they all they are doing is just hearing and obeying. They're doing very little questioning of the Quran. Mm-hmm. They're doing very little questioning of the footsteps of Prophet Muhammad, especially of the leadership of inshallah, what the world will find out in due time, inshallah, Allah, Allah, that Imam Muhammad was the revival, the light in the dark to call people back to this path of success. So the talking is good, like you said, but then we know Shaitan listens with an ear to hide and make, especially the language outside of the Quranic Arabic, you know, he finds the deviation in it. Well, he can't touch the Quranic Arabic, but he can deviate local Arabic, colloquial Arabic, you know, Saudi Arabic, and any other language that you translate this deen al-Islam in without Allah's Bismillah Rahman Rahim first. So again, it's all about modelization. You know, we don't have to pick and choose the words of truth. Allah, his name is Allah. The other ones are just his attributes. But he wants those who understand to let them know that he is Allah, you know, and that is very important, because sometimes you ain't got time to say nothing but one word, Allah, and that's it. Just want to say that.
All right. Thank you for the
comment. As-salamu alaykum.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Jamal, we got about 7.5 minutes look like left here. If we got some more comments that we can add, I know it's a subject that you can't complete in an hour or 2 hours here, but we'll do. And look like we got another. Look like our brother Mark Shaheed is back again, so let's bring him in. And brother Muhammad, go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and that'll take you out of the queue. All right. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Mark.
Yeah, alaykum as-salam, Instructor Henry Hasib and Dr. Jamal Rashid. Let me say this, and Dr. Jamal, you touched on it, and it can't be overlooked or looked over. This is something Imam Muhammad said, and I think some of you may have heard him say this. He said that if you have anything that is worth saying, you should put it in a universal language. That really struck me what Dr. Jamal said, and it's true. You want to be able to communicate with all people. All people don't know the religion of Al-Islam. But, you know, it's like being in, you talk about culture, and I think all of us have experienced it before. Go and get a pedicure, and you have people that run a lot of these type of pedicure, manicure shops. They speak a different language. It's part of their culture. And you feel a little strange because when they are speaking their language, you don't even understand what they're saying. They could be saying some good things, and they could be saying some bad things, and they're just laughing and everything, and if you're very sensitive, you might think they're talking about you, you know. And how many times have you ever called the wrong number, and you thought you had the right number, and you said, assalamu alaikum, and they said, assalamu alaikum. I'm just being a little humorous here, but I'm trying to bring across a point that Dr. Jamal was on just a few minutes ago. If you're going to utilize it, this is global. And so what Imam Muhammad is saying, put in a universal language. We don't have to say Allah. That's the extreme. Because now you got to, you don't want to alienate yourself as though you got something that's totally different and that people can't relate to. Use the word creator. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first revelation that came to the prophet. If you understand the religion, you said a creator, one that has created, if you're speaking about God. People can relate to that universal. Say true human. You don't have to say Muslim. Say true human. People can relate to that. True human. Exactly. Everybody's a human, but be a true human. Now you open their mind up to be able to receive whatever it is you say. I could say more. I know you don't have much time, so I'm just going to stop there. But I'm hoping that we're understanding that, especially those of us who are very, very extreme, and we can't even reach our own children by speaking in a universal language that everybody can accept and receive. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, thank you for that point. And also, I'd like to add that not only do we turn people away by not giving them the correct universal knowledge, but what they know may be distorted. So when we say Islam, right, what they may have in their mind is all sorts of stereotypes.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And misinformation. In this day of where misinformation has been emphasized to the extreme, misinformation. And so if they hear anything that we consider is Islamic, what they may immediately think of is a terrorist or any derogatory terminology that has been intentionally focused on in the last decade or so.
Dr. Rashid, we got one more caller we want to try to squeeze in before we run out of time. We got about 2.5 minutes here. We have area code 401258. Welcome to the program. State your name, where you calling from.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Angela Marie from North Providence, Rhode Island. I'd like to know, who are we trying to please? Are we trying to please Allah, or are we trying to please people? Because where I live, there's Spanish everywhere, all on the outside, the buses everywhere, every kind of interpretation everywhere on the TV for people who speak Spanish. Nobody's trying to say, except if the universal language is English, they're not trying to learn English. So now if you put everything in English, they still don't know what you say. Okay, so somebody's got to give in, and somebody's got to say, okay, if the universal language is English, well, then when they come to this country, people should learn English. We can't please everybody. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for your comment. And the best we have already stated is we try to do the very best we can, and Allah judges by our intentions. Thank you very much. And we have to get ready for Imam Adam Biya's Money Sense. We thank you all for chiming in and sharing with us today. And we ask that our most gracious, merciful Creator continue to bestow upon us his mercy and his grace. Thank you for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, and we will see you next week. Same time, same place.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Assalamu alaikum, welcome to Lara Berka.
Assalamu alaikum.
Adam Biya. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Adam Biya on Money Sense on this Thursday morning. I want to welcome all of you to our program today. It's July 27th. And we're going to begin firstly by reading from the Quran, and then we'll get into today's topic. I see a hand raised. If you can press 1 to come out of the queue, and then we can get on with the program. Well, we're going with the program anyway. But anyway, so we'd like to read from the Quran this morning. Suratul Baqarah. Suratul Nisa. Excuse me. Ayat 171. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ya ahlil kitabi la taghlu fi dinikum wa la taqulu ala lahi illa al-haq. إنما المسيح عيسى بن مريم ورسول الله وكلمته ألقاها إلى مريم وروح من فآمنوا بالله ورسوله ولا تقولوا ثلاثة انتهوا خيرا لكم انما الله اله واحد سبحانه ان يكون له ولد له ما في السماوات وما في الارض Wakafa Bilahi Wakila Sadakullahu Adim. In a translation as given by Abdul Yusuf Ali, see reference from Allah the Shaitan, the cursed with Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. O people of the book, commit no excesses in your religion, nor say of Allah aught but truth. Christ Jesus, the son of Mary, was no more than a messenger of Allah in his word, which he bestowed on Mary, and his spirit proceeding from him. So believe in Allah and his messengers. Say not Trinity, desist. It will be better for you. For Allah is one, Allah. Glory be to him. For exalted is he above having a son. To him belongs all things in the heavens and on earth. And enough is Allah as a disposer of affairs. Allah speaks the truth, and surely Allah's words are true. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. I was, as I normally do, looking at some posted information that people share with me on the internet. And came across this idea, this position that was held by Governor Ron DeSantis and probably others that are moving about trying to debunk the critical race theory idea. They created a problem and have begun to attack it. And if you look at the areas that they're attacking it in, it's probably something they want to do anyway. But anyway, we know that Florida has passed. In 2022, they passed the Stop Woke Act. Stop Woke Act. You know, and they named the act after a popular idea that has been shared throughout social media on being woke. Like, so they named laws after the idea that they created and shared. At any rate, one of the things that came about from this act is that let's follow chronologically, kind of put it in perspective. The original Stop Woke Act, which was in 2022, was shot down by a judge. And then they came and revised it a little bit. And they were able to get it passed. And it went into effect on July 1, 2023. And the reasoning they gave for passing the law was that they didn't want, and this was in history curriculum taught in Florida schools, that they didn't want any students or workers or any person to feel guilt and anguish or any other form of psychological distress due to their race, color, sex, or national origin. They pretty make it real general. But what they're really saying is they want Caucasian children to feel guilty because of what the Caucasian foreparents did for African Americans and other people of color, such as maybe American Indians or the Native population. I want to call American Indians, Columbus got it wrong, so I don't want to continue Columbus era. Or maybe even Mexicans. They don't want them to feel guilty about the history behind the oppression that occurred in America by people that look like them. And I'm putting that in there, by the way. So that was the basis for how that effect on education and why they said we stop teaching critical race theory. All right. So in order to do that, they changed the curriculum. And basically in the curriculum it stated that African Americans benefited from, or the slaves benefited from slavery. So in Florida, the students are being taught that the Africans who were brought to America benefited from slavery. Now, we've heard that before, you know, because the popular idea is the Africans were over in Africa running around the jungle. If you want to get an idea of what it's like, just get your old Tarzan movie or old Tarzan TV series. You know, Tarzan used to come on. Those of you that are younger, you might not know that, but I know when I was growing up, every Saturday morning, Tarzan would come on TV. Right? And the image of Tarzan was that Caucasians are so superior that you can take a Caucasian baby, fly from England to Africa with his parents, and the plane crashes. Killed everybody on board the plane except the baby. And the apes found the baby. And the apes nurtured the baby until it became a young man. And the Caucasians are so superior that you can take a Caucasian baby and the apes raise him, and they still would be king of the jungle. That's a bad man. King of the jungle. So that is the idea that was fed to me as I grew up in America in the 50s. Do you think me growing up and looking at that image and that image being fed in my mind, do you think it made me feel uncomfortable? Do you think that it was psychologically distressing to me? Do you think it made me feel anguish, knowing that we are so backward and so inferior, and our ancestors run around in Africa half-naked? Where was Ron DeSantis when I was growing up, speaking out for me and the millions of other African-American children that grew up watching Tarzan? knowing what I know now, if that wasn't critical race theory, I don't know what was. Right? Anyway, let's get back to the current situation. So they passed this act called the critical race theory. I mean, stop woke act is what they call it. Right? And it's designed to make sure that the history is taught, that it is taught, does not create anguish or guilt from Caucasian children, that they don't feel guilty. Making sure of that, right? So this is being taught. And then they said, well, we're not going to teach what really happened to the slaves. You think the slaves might have felt anguish? But we're not going to teach that because it might make some little Caucasian 6-year-old or 8-year-old sitting in the classroom feel guilty. So we're not going to teach that. We're going to teach that us bringing them to America, away from the jungle, and civilizing them, and teaching them our religion. Right? What's good for them. We actually did them a service. We did them a service because we taught them about our God. And we taught them about our way of life. And though they worked from can't see to can't see, we taught them a trade. We taught them how to be construction workers. Or in the fields, we taught them how to be good farmers. We gave them a skill that they wouldn't have gotten if they were still in the jungle, naked, running around half naked with their voodoo and their witch doctors and stuff. We taught them something. We civilized them. Well, I'm glad I don't live in Florida. I'd have two choices. Either move or start a Clare Muhammad school. Those are the only two choices I had. So I want to play this quick. It's about a 2-minute clip. And we'll come back after that, and well, I'm going to play that, then we'll go to player PSA. And then we'll open the boys up in the comments. You might, I see callers press 1, I'm going to bring them in as soon as we get back. So let's play this clip that I have.
All out tonight over Florida's new academic standards requiring educators to teach about the personal benefits African Americans may have received during slavery. Today, a Duval County history teacher resigned from his job over this new curriculum, and he's speaking with News for Jax I-Team investigator Tariq Minor. Tariq.
You know, all of this education controversy is happening in the midst of one of the worst teacher shortages in the history of Florida. Up until this morning, R.L. Gundy was teaching social studies on the north side at Rebaud High School. He says these new controversial standards are so hostile and tainted, he's calling it quits.
There's too much pressure now for a teacher to teach in this environment that they are created.
Pastor R.L. Gundy says he was already struggling to navigate teaching history to 6th and 7th graders while abiding by Florida's Stop Woke Law, which prohibits teachers from making students feel guilty or responsible for slavery, saying the nail in the coffin for his teaching career are these two benchmark clarifications that the African-American Task Force members approved. One clarification requires teachers to include instruction that slaves develop skills which could be applied for their personal benefit. The other, mandating educators to include acts of violence perpetrated against and by African-Americans in race riots. Gundy, who says he's been certified to teach since 1993, says he feels obligated to tell the whole story and not what he calls a watered-down version of black history.
I'm one of those people who was willing to challenge it, but I would have to have a group of lawyers around me to do it. So rather than to give my principal a headache and to give the school system a headache, it's about the kids. And at the end, how do we still teach the kids?
In Gundy's resignation letter, he writes, the governor, the education commissioner, task force, and those who wrote this new standard of history should be ashamed of themselves. The climate of teaching social studies in the state of Florida is hostile. Standards are biased and not inclusive of the truth of the African-American descent historical context. Gundy says educators across the state are expressing similar concerns.
Now, they won't admit it, but those principals and other teachers, they are concerned and they're worried about their job with all of these throwing books out. Now you got this history thing. It's unnecessary.
Now, Gundy says he and other African-American faith leaders are now considering opening academies for African-American studies outside of the public school system, including education through churches.
All right. My man, Gundy, he's doing something that makes sense. Start your own school. Right. Now, for those of you that think that this is only a Florida thing, as of last week, 17 states have signed similar legislation into law. No, 18 states have done that. In 17 other states, they attempted to do it, but it was overturned or at best it was stalled. 8 states, the process is ongoing, and my state is one of those 8 states where they're trying to. And in 7 states, there's no ban attempt. They're not even trying. They're discounting it. So if you want to know where your state stands, you can press 1 and ask them. I'll tell you where your state stands. I'm not going to start listing the states, but anyway. All right, let me play this PSA, then we'll be right back after that, and we'll come to our caller.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sabrita Hadi, director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, we go to the phone lines again. This is error code 219-484. Assalamu alaikum. 219-484.
Okay, I was on mute.
We'll come
sorry.
Back to that.
Sorry, I'm there.
That's all right. Oh, okay. Doc, you're in the Illinois, right?
No, Indiana. Gary.
Indiana, okay, well.
Gary, Indiana.
I got it. Your state's on the list. The proposal is in process.
Well, you know, Indiana is a Republican state, even though Gary is a predominantly black city, it don't get thrown off that the rest of the state of Indiana is predominantly Republican.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm telling you is on the list.
Yes.
They're in the process of trying to do it. Don't mean they're going to be successful.
Right.
So don't give up yet.
See, people get misinformation by thinking, oh, Gary, well, Indiana. No, Gary is just a very small percentage of what the state of Indiana is.
Yeah, well,
and people have to understand.
But yeah, I mean, well, I think most do.
I don't know.
When I look at Indiana, I know enough about it. It's called the Hoosier State, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a formality, but you know that it has nothing. You know,
they look up the word Hoosier.
Was actually organized and formed in Indiana as well. You know. The Ku Klux Klan.
All I had to do is look up the word Hoosier. That'll be all right.
What I wanted to say is, you know, Africa's contributions to America is humongous. Many inventions are by African and African-American people, inventors. You know, and you can go from the basics to understanding that the aerospace and technology, you know, the satellites, what we're able to do with artificial intelligence was from the minds of African-American women, you know. So from the broom to the mop to satellites that we enjoy technology, it's through the hands of and even the virus, the vaccine for the COVID disease was at the hands of a black medical doctor, black female medical doctor. That Trump wanted to just say that a woman. He described her as a woman, you know, and then the media went and stereotyped her by trying to make her seem like she was a witch doctor, you know, giving that little stereotype stuff, you know. But, you know, we are, and the other thing is, you know, what's going to backfire, what is backfiring, anytime you try to stop people from knowing certain things, it makes people more curious to want to know why is it that people like DeSantis and Cruz and other starch-notch people in this country are so determined to keep the truth about enslavement away from the minds of the youth. Why is it that they're so adamant to try to keep that away? It's backfiring on them, you know, and it will backfire even more because intelligent white youth will be more curious to learn more than if they're just left it alone. You see?
Well, brother, the worst thing we can do and sit on the sideline and do nothing because it's in good hands.
I didn't say sit on the sideline.
I understand, brother.
What I'm saying. I didn't say nothing.
I'm saying
on the sideline. I said it's going to backfire on them. That's interpretation. It's going to backfire on them, but that's not telling us to sit down and don't do nothing.
But I just want to make sure.
It's going to make people more curious. That means they're going to work. If they're more curious, that means they're going to go and research themselves. You see what I'm saying?
I only said that, Doc. Hold on. We can't both talk at the same time. So you got to put a period in there or pause.
All right, go ahead.
I only said that for those who might take it that way. I'm not talking to you. I'm saying that for those that might take it, because I hear things a lot, and people do nothing because they think it's already in good hands, already taken care of. So I'm trying to bring a balance on that, because I hear that too much on people that don't do anything. And I'm not saying I know that because I'm looking at them. I know them, and they sit and do nothing. They don't get riled up, you know, whatever.
Right.
I'm saying now's the time, as you're saying, now's the time to go to work. But we got to make it plain to them so they know it's time to go to work. And not sit down and we're not going to take care of it, so I do nothing.
Right. Apathy is a serious disease. Apathy is a serious disease that is very prevalent in not only our community, but in many people's communities. Apathy is a very serious mental disease. When they talk about mental illness, apathy. So another thing is, you know, I had the opportunity to learn that one of our most staunch historians named Dr. John Hope Franklin, he wrote the book, and listen to the title of this, From Slavery to Freedom. The title itself is distorted. From Slavery to Freedom. It would tell people that our beginning started in slavery, which is utmost lie. Our history did not begin in slavery. And then, guess what are the first chapters of this book called From Slavery to Freedom? It talks about the great kingdoms of Ghana and Mali and Songhai, you know, Ghana, Mali, Songhai, and other states, land of their fathers. That's the first chapters of this book. But he was forced, when I say he, talking about Dr. John Hope Franklin, one of our pioneer historians, he was forced because my historian that I had privilege of being a student of, Dr. Lorenzo Green from Lincoln University, they were good friends. And he told us firsthand that Dr. Franklin had to agree to accept the title From Slavery to Freedom in order to get the book published.
He had the first chapter in there. He had the first chapter in there that you talked about. He still got the information.
Yeah, but he was forced to take the title, which is distorted, From Slavery to Freedom. That was the problem, was the title itself, From Slavery to Freedom. Our history did not begin in slavery. And so that
was I used to sell the book, brother. I used to sell it.
I know.
And
I never
saw it as he was trying to bring people who were slaves.
Madam, you're an exception. I'm saying that the majority of people are going to take this as this misperception as the truth.
Because they won't read the book.
You're speaking personally. I'm just saying the majority of people will look at this as a truth, and this is a highly invested distortion.
Could be so, but the majority of people ain't going to read the book, first of all.
But they're going to remember the title. You're right.
Yep,
they're not going to
read
the
book,
but they're going to remember the title, and the title itself is enough to continue a perpetual lie. That our history began in slavery. And what do most people think today when you think about African history? It's slavery.
Hey,
the first word comes to our
too,
minds when we hear about our past is slavery. And so the title itself is all they remember.
Did you hear this program Money Sense 2 weeks ago?
Probably. I'm not recalling. What was the topic? If we were talking
about
Rodney Rodney Walters' book, How Africa Underdeveloped, How You're
yes,
Underdeveloped Africa. That's what you're talking about, right?
That's the gist of the program,
yeah.
What we said.
Yeah, that's what we're talking
and
about. How
most
Europe
of them, if you're not free, yeah, and they're not free. They're not free.
Right.
So if you're not free, guess what? You're a slave.
Yes. And it don't take but a soundbite to make a person a slave forever, for generations,
so,
a soundbite.
Yep. And it would help to have a free African country to have a current example
freedom
of
fighter.
What we claim we used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, a freedom
it
fighter.
Would help to have that example. Well, no, I'm
yeah.
saying
and
yeah,
you know
yeah,
what made,
that too, but
and you know what made Imam Muhammad so great, even greater than great, was that he understood the importance to use sound bites to turn a new world into a new world. He used sound bites, just the word new world, new Africa, you know, all kinds of technology that the imam used from his voice was sound bites,
mm-hmm.
you know, from scripture. You know, he used, Allah bless him. When I say Imam Muhammad, Allah bless him to venture into sound bites to remake the world. That's a sound bite. You know, that's phenomenal. But it'd be here for generations to reconstruct the family life. That's a sound bite. The effects
mm-hmm.
of slavery is a sound bite. You know? Whew. You just don't, you understand, I understand, but you know, we're dealing with people that don't understand. And that's why we have to continuously re-say what we say, and it's not being redundant. It's being perpetually re-emphasizing. Because soundbites are constantly used over and over.
Until we get the problem solved, it is not redundant.
Well, you're right.
Until we get it,
that's a word that's not used.
Yeah,
but they use it.
Because we're still dealing with the issue. Until we're no longer dealing with the issue, it is not being redundant. I mean, that's just like saying the Quran is redundant.
You're exactly right.
The Quran is redundant. And I'll repeat things over and over again in the Quran.
That's right.
And some
you're
people
right.
say, well, the Quran is redundant. No, it's not redundant.
That's right. You're actually right, absolutely right in bringing that point out.
You know.
Because people misuse it and exploit it.
Yep. Yep.
Yes, the people who got ear to hear right now, they are being blessed with some incredible information. Those who got ear to hear right now on AM360, they are being blessed with some incredible information. Way more than you can get from any so-called mass media. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Right.
Yes, sir. Right here on AM360. The few that are listening compared to the millions that are not listening. They are extraordinary.
That puts the burden on the few that are listening to actualize the information. That puts the burden on us.
Yeah, but I don't want to say burden. I want to say opportunity. I don't want, because some people might say burden. I don't want no burden. I say, listen, that puts you in an extraordinary opportunity to share some superb information. And I want that opportunity. I want that opportunity.
I use the word, you know, burden in a sense, but I remember the Quran, Allah said in the Quran that Allah places no burden on a soul greater than it can bear.
Yes.
So whatever word you want to use, it's something you can handle. It's something Allah made you for. You know, it's something you can bring about, because there's no burden on you greater than you can bear.
Yes.
And so from that
like
position,
I said, our conversation right now is astronomically fantastic. Our conversation, just in language and understanding how Imam defined in definition, is the first step. And definition is the first step towards instruction or information that leads to a logical conclusion. It's phenomenal. And we often have to hear that and be remembered of these things to show how blessed we are and to actualize on it, to be practical on it. Not just to say it, but to understand why we say that. It's extraordinary.
Yes, sir.
And it's not bragging. It's not being big-headed or any of those things. But just to show how honored and blessed, special we are to have such insights. That's what this is all about.
Yes, sir. Well, Tarek, I appreciate you.
Yes, I appreciate you as well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No problem, sir. No problem. No problem.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, my brother. All right. Anybody else who got a comment, just press 1 to get in the queue, and you can join the conversation. I'd like to know what you think about this thing, but
I can hang on if you don't have a caller, you know, just to take up
not
the time if you
not,
need so.
Not a problem. You can hang on, brother. Another reason I brought this up, to know this mentality is coming, right? I can remember being in books, in the books I've been reading, and even the books that Dr. Jamal wrote, it was designed to deal with us as a people and things we've gone through, right?
Yeah.
And at least you have young people that are conscious and know a little bit about our history, and has moved them to want to do something, to want to learn better, right? Now they're trying to take that totally out of the school system. And I heard Brother Henry say during the previous hour what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said and what we learned in the first, that if a man won't treat you right, he ain't going to teach you right. When we talked about in Africa and the domination that the European had in Africa, well, one of the things that they did was take over the education system. Take over the education system. Right? And as independent as some of these African leaders think they are, their minds have been affected. Their minds have been affected. And there were African leaders in the 60s and 70s that saw that they saw that the missionaries came over to their country first. And they bought their idea of religion. Right? And they bought the image of themselves as the image of God. They were working on the minds of the people. You know, I talked about toddlers growing up. I mean, evidently, does anybody on here remember seeing toddlers growing up? Or is it, I want somebody to bear witness, because I don't want everybody to think that I'm so old that I'm talking about, you know, like I'm talking to, when I talk to young people, and I talk about certain things that happened when I was coming along, and then they say, I ask them, have you heard of this person? And I only have to, I'm back in the 90s. Have you heard of, they never heard of them. Well, there it comes. What's that all about? Got a call on here, area code 706-627.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, carry on. I was back then. I remember Charles going to do moves and things. So you got a witness that what you're talking about so far is clear and true.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Brother Muhammad. I'm glad you validated it. I thought I was going to talk to a bunch of young people out there and never heard of Charles. Like, I'm going crazy. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Love you, man. What are you going to tell?
Okay. Area code 727-741.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Martha Naila Abdullah here. And I have to say, I'm raising my hand. Yes, I do recall. Do you remember the movie?
Yeah, that's all right.
Alhamdulillah.
Oh, you're
more
talking
than
about,
that.
You're talking about the movie.
Well,
that's right. You're still young. So you're
yeah, no. I saw the black and white, everyone. I saw the black. I'm going to go right to it, Adam. I saw the black and white on Saturday morning.
On TV, yeah. All right.
Yes,
on Saturday
sir.
Morning. They didn't come on Saturday. See, they couldn't have put dogs on Sunday morning because that'll conflict with Jesus.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So it was Saturday morning with him. And then that
exactly.
Day, the way they kept Sunday morning open for the other white guy.
Exactly. He ruled the animals in the jungle, and he had friends with the rest of the people who were dressed very scat.
Yeah.
He loved too.
Run around the naked, boy. I mean, come on. That's, you know, that
and
was
on
just me.
The
I mean,
elephant. Upon the elephant, which was now that I look back, that my unconsciously, yes, you definitely made its point. I was listening to you and Dr. Jamal Rashid. It definitely made its point. The subliminal message went deep, which kept the captivity of our mind focused on. And when I say this I apologize. But when I asked the question at our interfaith discussion titled "Racism and get past racism," but we have to have the discussion. So having the discussion, and you have this room full of people willing to have the discussion, and I asked the question, which the majority Europeans. I asked the question, what is our measuring goal of saying we've made success or we've reached the goal of saying we no longer have racism? What is the measure? No one wanted to say that it was to be measured by the European success, considered success. So it was the image that was reaching for rather than the practicality of living the life and respecting one another totally.
Well, the idea is, and again, when you come up with a premise that Africans put, I mean African Americans who were enslaved, learned a trade. You remember the old racist thing that they say, well, we benefited. We brought you over here and gave you a better life. That concept.
I remember that, and I remember somebody saying, what do you have to lose?
You know, but that's the idea. We brought you over here, so you have you at least have a better life. That's their justification for slavery. And now if they're going to teach that in class, not the hardships and things we went through in the process of slavery, but we taught them we taught them skills and trades. We benefited them. You know what I mean?
That's worse.
You know, that's worse, but that helps them out. That makes them feel better to do that.
And
right?
my positive take of not retaliation, but movement forward without regard to what the other person is going to do is put the responsibility right square on our shoulders. And just as the prayer line represents, we become more shoulder to shoulder and implement a continuous education in the communities that we live in, find the strategies, and do it. And that's for everyone. I mean, educating everyone and show it rather than the lie that's being shared. Have the conversations. You remember the situation of being under the trees here in St. Petersburg, and I know everybody, Florida with the Chad, is it the Chad, hanging Chad, Florida with the Gators, Florida. And there are things on the books here in Florida, you wouldn't believe. It says, do not feed the Gators. The real thing behind that is that because they used to feed people to the Gators. But now they make it seem gator bait. There used to be if they tell the truth, they used to have things. I worked in a store where they literally had saucers and cups showing an African baby or African man looking down, and they're in a tree, but the tree is hanging over the water. And the gator is coming upon them, you know, right there with his mouth open. So when they said gator bait, they truly, really meant they fed people.
That's
the
what
gator.
They meant, and that's what they promoted, right?
Exactly.
So the bottom line is, it should motivate. That's why I'm glad that pastor came to the conclusion he came to. We have to start our own schools. You understand? If you don't teach them, you can't have them. You can't have them.
Exactly. You have to claim.
No.
And two, and not let it, you know, it has to start, just like I say, in the home. But how do you commune in the home if you're not aware? And so just yesterday I had a conversation with my nephew who has been in prison. And I say this, everyone, lovingly, because what he got himself caught up in at age 16, he's now 51. He just got out of prison early this year, from 16 to 51.
Go ahead. I got another call.
Oh, okay.
And then my time is
fleeting. Okay, I'll quickly.
But thank you for calling in, my sister.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I'll leave it right there. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. Alaykum assalam. All right, let's go back to the phone lines right here. 706-627.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get to finish what I was saying. Anyway, don't let all of what we're talking about distract us from the fact that we look at Bilal, we look at Mansa Musa, we look at Muhammad Ali, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Imam W.D. Muhammad. They have established an economical history, a intelligent history that they are trying to make us forget about. By using the bait, the gator bait, of what we were called before we became Allah's servant and free people on this earth, by embracing the final revelation of the Quran and the life example of Prophet Muhammad. And that's the whole scheme behind the Gator Bait. They're trying to use our brothers and sisters who haven't woke up yet, but they have money. That's why a lot of people from Africa and other countries are coming here, because we steal our bait. They're coming to get the money that we have in hoping that they can establish a reality that's not based upon Quran and Sunnah. I'm talking about African brothers and sisters. But there are also a lot of them are coming over here now as Muslims who are sincere about understanding our mission that Almighty God Allah has put us on, and that we are the leadership. They still have their doubt. They still think they can maybe undermine us. But if we stay firm and unified, we will show that picture on the Muslim Journal where the Muslim from over the sea is holding hands with the other Muslim here in the United States of America. But we know color don't have nothing to do with it, so all we're really looking at is the human being embracing each other, you know, from the darkness to the light. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, et cetera, you know, and vice versa. Just want to make sure we don't get distracted from that some of the greatest economical people in the world are Bilal, Mansa Musa, richest human being to ever been that recorded. Muhammad Ali, who became, out of this country, one of the richest men, and the people's champ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, showed the economics that we put together as poor, slave mentality people, put our pennies together and freed ourselves. And we stopped when we got religion.
Man, Muhammad.
Because we would still have to, was holding on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to say that.
You know.
Appreciate
you
that.
Remember, you know. You, no, I'm not getting you to hang up. I just want to say something, bro. You know, everybody talks and don't put periods on. They put commas and colons. I can't say nothing. You know that Imam Muhammad said that under the Nation of Islam, it was a show of establishment. You know what that means? A show of establishment.
Yes,
it wasn't establishment. It was a show of establishment.
Right.
It was a
right.
show of establishment, but it never did reach the point of establishment.
Right.
Right. So, okay, my brother, I got one more caller, then I think I have. No, they're gone. All right. So look here, it's about time. It's about time to move on. I got to get out of the way. See, man, Yusuf Ramadan is coming up next. And man, Yusuf Ramadan, his topic today is No God But God. No God But God. So we're going to play this PSA, and then the next voice you hear, inshallah, will be Imam Yusuf Ramadan. As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins with the seed. Rain International is world leader in seed nutrition and the first to market seed-based products. Our flagship product is called Soul. S-O-U-L. The main ingredient is the black cumin seed. Here are a few reasons to drink Soul. Supports a healthy immune system. Give a body the boost to stay healthy and strong. Improve indigestion. Decrease infection. Remove inflammation and other benefits. This is an opportunity to improve your health and increase your wealth. Please call or text me at 914-434-375. Please join me in supporting CWSC, the Community-Wide Sugar Conference, and AM360 in remaking the world into a better place. We support the 50-year human family planning and look forward to doing business with you. Our website is raininternational.com. We are available at any time. Please call this number, 914-434-3275. Thank you.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim-hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM360, where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Abdul Rahim. That is peace be unto you. With God's name, merciful, benefactor, merciful, redeemer, we'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan, and we'll be talking in today's program. We concentrate on trending topics, issues of concern and we always say that from the Muslim perspective, we're talking about trending topics, issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is the human perspective. It always should be the human perspective. So today's topic that never goes out of fashion, never goes out of style, and that is no God but God, the relevancy of it, you know. And of course, we're referring to the essential belief of the, not only of the Muslim community, but of what they refer to as the Abrahamic faith, as Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and others. But also, not just that concept, but also the book. There's a book that was some years ago, I've had for some years now, by Reza Aslan, No God But God, The Origins, Evolution, and Future of Islam. And, you know, it's still a big bone of contention. People are still debating as if it was 1,400 years ago about whether or not there's, God, the existence of God, the nature of God, you know, if God is one, you know, whether human beings are God or other objects, etc. And for us as Muslims, you know, some of us might find it rather odd that people are still having this debate within themselves and with each other. And we know Allah asks us in our book and his book, Kitab Allah, you know, the rhetorical question, does one make sense or two? Does one God make sense or two? And further, that Allah hasn't put into the human being more than one heart, you know. I find a lot of the book fascinating in the history that he did. Reza Aslan, who was a scholar of religion, and he used to be popular. He used to be quite popular on shows that were popular, you know, Bill Maher, etc. He was a frequent guest, a regular, until he began to push back on some of the what they refer to as Islamophobia. He began to push back on that. And really, you know, people wanted to dispute with him and debate with him that had very, very limited knowledge of the subject, of religion in general, and certainly of Islam in particular. So one passage that I wanted to really read, I wanted to bring to our attention, the attention of our audience, and he says, religions become institutions when the myths and rituals that once shaped their sacred histories are transformed into authoritative models of orthodoxy, the correct interpretation of myths, and orthopraxy, the correct interpretation of rituals. The one is often emphasized over the other. Christianity may be the supreme example of an orthodoxic religion. It is principally one's beliefs expressed through creed that make one a faithful Christian. On the opposite end of the spectrum is Judaism, a quintessentially orthopraxic religion, where it's principally one's actions expressed through the law that make one an observant Jew. It is not that beliefs are irrelevant in Judaism or actions unimportant in Christianity. Rather, it is that of the two religions, Judaism places far greater emphasis on orthopraxic behavior than does Christianity. Like Judaism, Islam is primarily an orthopraxic religion, so much so that Wilfred Cantwell Smith has suggested translating the word Sunni as orthoprax rather than orthodox. However, because the ulema have tended to regard Islamic practice as informing Islamic theology, orthopraxy and orthodoxy are intimately bound together in Islam, meaning questions of theology or kalam are impossible to separate from questions of law or fiqh. For this reason, the ulama often dismiss the practice of pure speculative theology as insignificant babble. Kalam means talking or speech, and Muslim theologians were often pejoratively referred to as al-kalam, the people of talking. What most concerned the ulama from the first days of the Islamic expansion, especially as the ummah became ever more widely dispersed and varied with regard to language and culture, was not so much theological arguments about the attributes of God, though as we shall see, this would eventually become vigorously debated among scholars, but rather the formalization of specific ways to express faith through ritual. The ultimate objective was to form strict guidelines that would establish exactly who was and who was not a Muslim. The result of their labors became what is now commonly known as the five pillars of Islam. The five pillars constitute the principal ritual activities of the Muslim faith. Yet, as John Renard remarks, the pillars are not meant to reduce the spirit and life of a complex global community to a cluster of religious practices. More than anything, the five pillars are meant as a metaphor for Islam. They are a summary, not just of what is required to be a member of the Ummah, but also what it means to be a Muslim. Contrary to perception, the pillars are not oppressive obligations. Quite the opposite. These are highly pragmatic rituals in that the believer is responsible only for those tasks that he or she is able to perform. Nor are the pillars mere perfunctory actions. The single most important factor in the performance of any Muslim ritual is the believer's intention, which must be consciously proclaimed before the ritual can begin. Ultimately, the pillars are intended to be a totality of actions, which according to Muhammad A. Abu Rida, are not merely verbal and bodily, but above all, mental and moral, performed according to certain conditions of conscious intention, of external and internal purity, presence of mind, humility, and submissiveness of the heart, creating within the soul of the believer a real life of religious devotion and spirituality. So I hope that we can, those of us who consider ourselves the students of our beloved Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Allah, continue to be students of his. I hope we can see in the echo of those words, the things that he has taught us about these principles that are very, very right on time and very accurate. Very accurate, you know. Now, someone sent me a video of how Malcolm X converted 1 million Americans to Islam. He's talking about Malcolm. And he mentions, of course, Muhammad Ali, which many people credit Malcolm with bringing him to the Nation of Islam. And he was not the first, but he was certainly involved. And, of course, our beloved Imam, Martha bin Muhammad, Rahimahullah alayh. We want to listen to a part of that as well for our broadcast, and we will discuss it.
America. Hateful attitudes toward the black population were rampant, and tension could be felt in every part of the society. It was also a time marred by one of the longest and most intense economic crises in modern history, the Great Depression. African Americans began to migrate in waves from the southern states to industrial cities in the north, hoping to find work. But this only added fuel to the fire, as jobs in these cities were already scarce enough as it was. There were protests, riots, stores were burned down, people were injured, and some people were even killed. And it was within this environment of chaos and violence that a mysterious man by the name of Wallace Fard Muhammad arrived in Detroit. No one knew who he was or where he came from. In fact, Wallace may not have even been his real name. FBI has records of him using 57 other aliases, and just like a salesman, he went from door to door and started preaching to people about a new religion he liked to call Islam. He managed to get around 30 close followers over a few years, but just as he arrived in Detroit, he disappeared without a trace. And that was the year 1934, and soon after, one of his closest and most loyal followers took charge of the new religion. His name was Elijah Muhammad. You see, both Wallace and Elijah called the new religion Islam. But if you take a closer look, you'll find something completely different. They preached that white people were a race of devils created by an evil scientist named Yaqub some 6,600 years ago, and that Allah had come to America in the form of Wallace himself to remind the black people that they were the true inheritors of the earth. And while it may seem like a crazy cult from the outside, it gave reason for why the white man was so cruel to the black man. It gave purpose to the black people of America, and it reminded them of how the American slave trade was prophesied in the Bible, according to him, of course. What they had invented was definitely a new religion, and although they had many words that were related to Islamic concepts, none of these beliefs were truly Islamic. Nonetheless, they still called themselves the Nation of Islam. Are you tired of feeling self-conscious about your teeth due to
dropping in
or stains?
Ad,
we have a solution.
And we'll try to skip
nonetheless,
that.
They still called themselves the Nation of Islam. Elijah's message of black supremacy was quickly gaining followers in the black neighborhoods of America. Perhaps its most important follower, though, was the man whose story you don't know. The name given to him at birth was Malcolm Little. He was born in Omaha, Nebraska, and had experienced the full force of American white supremacism during his childhood. Four of his uncles were killed in anti-black attacks, and his family had to move states twice to escape the violence. When he was only 6 years old, his father was also murdered by a white supremacist, though the police tried to push it under the rug, calling it a traffic accident. In high school, he was a bright student with dreams of becoming a lawyer, but his teachers let him know that that was never going to happen. He soon dropped out of high school and traveled to Boston, hoping to make a life for himself in the black community there. And Malcolm was a hustler. He got involved with drug selling and pimping, armed robbery, and he made a name for himself in the process while also getting the attention of the police. In 1946, at the age of 21, he was arrested and sentenced to 10 years in prison. And that's where he learned about the Nation of Islam. His brothers had already joined the nation, and they would constantly send him letters telling him about this new movement. Malcolm Little began writing his own letters to Elijah directly, who in fact wrote back to him frequently. And Elijah managed to convince him to give up his evil ways. Over the years, this had
This is why it's so important, brothers and sisters, that, you know, even people with good intentions, we can't let them tell our story. We have to tell our own story. You know, it was actually Malcolm's sister that originally brought his attention to the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
An influence on Malcolm. And he began while in prison by giving up smoking and pork. He also started praying to Allah, worshiping him and asking him for his guidance. Malcolm Little joined the Nation of Islam and changed his last name, erasing the name given to his ancestors by their slave master, and instead adopted a single letter in its place. His name was Malcolm X. In 1952, Malcolm was released early from prison. He immediately went to Chicago to meet Elijah and become one of his ministers. And at the time, the Nation of Islam only had around 1,000 members. But that soon changed. Malcolm was an incredible speaker with a fiery personality to match. He would speak to the black communities about their...
I mean, there's no proof about that number also. Whenever they would be asked about how many members there was in the Nation of Islam, they would say, those that know don't say, and those that say don't know.
Fears about their poverty, their misery, and about how these blue-eyed white devils were oppressing them. Tens of thousands of people would show up to hear him speak, and the nation grew exponentially. And by 1960, some estimates show that the nation had even grown to more than 100,000 members. And
again,
Malcolm X would soon cross paths with someone just as energetic and charismatic as him.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today.
Cassius Clay was an up-and-coming star in the boxing world. He was fast, he was pretty, and he had a devastating punch. He was undefeated and hugely popular among the black community, and the Nation of Islam took note. In 1962, Malcolm X met Cassius, becoming both a close friend and a spiritual and political mentor to him. The Nation of Islam was still an extremely controversial political force, and so he kept his relationship with him secret. Cassius went on to win fight after fight, winning 19 bouts in a row, all while becoming more and more politically provocative in the process. He called for black men of America to stand up for themselves and not turn the other cheek against the white aggressors. And in 1964, Cassius got the opportunity to set his legacy in stone, a championship fight. The odds were against him. His opponent was a 7-1 favorite. Cassius was the underdog, and yet he completely dominated in the ring. And after the fight, Cassius found a new confidence in himself and announced to the world that he had joined the Nation of Islam. And just like Malcolm X before him, he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. A few weeks after Muhammad Ali had become the world champion, Malcolm X flew across the ocean to Mecca for Hajj. And what he saw there changed him forever. Now remember, Malcolm X had been part of the Nation of Islam, and although there were some concepts such as Allah, the Quran, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Hajj, fasting, all these things, they originally came from Islam, but they were completely distorted by the nation. It was a black supremacist cult. Only black people could be Muslim, and they were better than all other races. So imagine how Malcolm X felt when he stood in front of the Kaaba in his ihram. In front of him was a sea of people from every country on earth, all in the same clothes, all praying and worshiping in the same way. It was both shocking and humbling all at the same time.
So we're going to pick back up on that. Right now we have some important announcements for you that we need to bring to your attention. So please don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, and we're back. And, you know, as we listen to those promos, brothers and sisters, about economics of our life, about the relationships. You know, the more that we listen to the news, the headlines, you know, the current events, the trending topics and the issues of concern, the more we find al-Islam or the teachings of al-Islam front and center. The world is going to hell in a handbasket in terms of guidance. They can't even decide on whether or not, you know, what is a woman. They can't decide on what is a woman, what is a man. You know, they have people coming out saying that, you know, when women attempt to fight back and say, you know, women have their menstrual cycle, they come out and say, women don't own that. That doesn't belong to women. You know, these are the arguments that you know, ostensibly educated, intelligent people are having right before our very eyes, you see? And I'm looking at 706-627. I don't know if you're hanging around from before, but if you want to make a ask a question or make a comment, we'll give you an opportunity to do so now.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad by the way of Columbus, Georgia. I think we know how serious our situation is when we're going to be questioned on the day of each every one of us standing before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What did we do with our time? You know, what did you do with your time? You know, and we know that when you turn it around to listen to something behind you, you're not paying attention to your future. We know that we have to build that Allah has gave us the opportunity to share with ourselves first, our loved ones, and et cetera. And we are spending time on of those who have lived that, the broadcast that guy talking about, many of us lived through that. We already know about that. Do you really think that it takes from 1975 to now for us to really comprehend what was made clear from the jump street? You know, we need to be insured. Trying to build this model future for ourselves, our loved ones, and all human beings if they want it. And not continually let Shaitan mesmerize us with the history, with the past. That's not even true. We know it's all mixed up. It's a bunch of lies and all like that and everything else. Spend very little time on revelation. The revelation of the men and the people who follow those men that Allah made messengers and prophets of God, all the way up to the last one. And we know it don't take no 1,400 years for those of us who were blessed during the time and descendants of those Sahabas and of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, you know, and those followers who followed them all the way up to now. We have a job to do, you know, and we shouldn't continue to listen to the same thing that we've been listening to since 1975. Some of us have been listening to ever since 1960. You know, and we have reviewed history very thorough. But we need to ask ourselves, are we mesmerized? Are we hypnotized? What is keeping us from talking about the future, building the future? We have all the money now. We have all of the faith. We have all of the permission of the Creator of everything we see and don't see to go here on and build this final opportunity for the human family to be for real, not artificial, but to be for real and show them that there is a God. There are human beings who have reached a level of intelligence to where they are trying, they are every day taking their will and putting it in the will of the Creator for the sake of all the humanity, etc. And we are also using our will to fight the schemes of the Satan, which are nightmares of our own being. So no one not making us think this. No one not making us listen to this stuff over and over and over again, and we're not learning from it. Nobody's doing that but us. Each individual and then each other, each one of us is a group. We are swaying each other to waste time when children, not only of the world, but especially our children, are being dying every day, being misled every day. Don't know whether they're going to come, and don't know if they, like you were saying a few seconds ago, don't know if they're male or female, and they're questioning their own gender, their own intelligence. When we're supposed to be coming to show.
Okay. I appreciate your, contribution.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your contribution. Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's an analyst.
All right. I don't know if this is a holdover from the last show. 334-419. State your name and where you're calling from, please.
Assalamu alaikum. Michael Hameen, Jacksonville, Florida, host of Not Just Talk tonight at 8 o'clock every Thursday. Thank you for accepting my call. Imam Muhammad shared with us many approaches and strategies. And one of them was to go back into the past of our African-American ethnic group here in America. Yes. And bring forward best of what that experience held out for us. For instance, Carter G. Woodson, Frederick Douglass, and I came across a site on the internet, Colored Conventions Project, and it talks about how the response of anti-black mobs violence in Ohio in 1829, how it prompted the response of the Colored Convention movement in America, where 200 state and national colored conventions were held between 1830 and the 1890s. And with the technology we have today, we can find ways to better organize ourselves for community development. I work with Dr. Hamid El-Amin, who facilitates a Clara Muhammad Memorial Organization and a Islamic Education Consortium. He's been doing it for a number of years. And he came up with a focus, Imam Muhammad, as an institutional leader. He identified it as the Imam leaving us documented institutional memory. So if we could just have conferences and meetings where we look at Imam Wahdeen Muhammad in terms of the field of his leadership, like folks look at Einstein and other notables in various fields of study who have passed on, but their documented essays and other recorded information is utilized to advance those fields of study even more. And you know, I'm looking at us better organizing ourselves to really establish institutional leadership. You know, the leadership is always a challenge in terms of, you know, moving forward in a productive way, and particularly with the challenges of African Americans because of the social conditioning that we've experienced, you know. And lastly, Imam Muhammad left us something that we really need to get more out of, and that was he identified the Nation of Islam as not only bean pies and newspapers, but he described the Nation of Islam as a language environment. And that is so rich in terms of us looking at our circumstances. We have an open. You've mentioned several instances of oppressive language environment, and we have the Quran in the example of Prophet Muhammad as the means by which we can change that language environment, particularly if we utilize what Imam Muhammad has left us in terms of insights into those things to have better perception. Thank you, Imam.
Thank you so much. Alhamdulillah. Yes, that's a good perspective on what's going on. And, you know, the Imam, he gave us the history. He said, you know, don't let people come and distort the history. The history is very, very important. We can't forget about that history. We have to make sure that we tell the story, because other people will, you know, not only for reasons of monetary gain, but in order to take us in a different direction. And, you know, I was just watching a talk between one of the ministers of the Nation of Islam and a quote-unquote Sunni brother, Orthodox brother, and I believe it was happening in London. And he was saying, you know, the brother was trying to impress upon him the notion of la ilaha illallah and how that doesn't, you know, wash with the belief of someone coming in the person of Farad Muhammad or whoever. And his response was, God can do whatever he wills. He can do whatever he wants. Well, we know that to be true. But what he wills is the creation is that he's given it to us. He expressed his will to us. He gave us certain laws and the laws of gravity. It's a law. So we know that if you throw a ball to the ground, it will hit the ground and bounce back up. We know that if you can throw it as hard as you want, and if Allah wanted, it wouldn't hit the ground. But he didn't create the creation like that, did he? We can throw it up and it can bounce back down, not just drop back down. So those laws, we know God, Allah, he hasn't expressed his will to us in that way, right? So when we come with these phantasmagoric ideas, you know, and then we say God, and the Imam Muhammad spoke on that. He said that idea of God coming in, he said that's like the Christian, or worse than what the Christians are saying. So we know a lot of people are being influenced by those ideas today. Young people, innocent people, young people are being influenced by it, you know. So we want to continue with some of what the brother was giving and how we got to where we are now, how we were converted from that thinking, you know, to the place that we are now, and how many people, that word environment, that language environment that the brother was just talking about, you know, it has the Imam used the word magnetism. It has some magnetism is something that draws something to it, you know, with stress, you know. So let's continue a little bit.
It was both shocking and humbling all at the same time. Everything he had ever stood for, all that he had fought for his entire life had led up to this moment. And then he realized something that gave him tremendous guilt. He had called himself a Muslim for the last 15 years, and yet he didn't even know how to pray. When he returned to the U.S., he quickly began preaching about Islam and speaking out against the Nation and Elijah Muhammad.
At the time, Muhammad Ali was still with the Nation and broke off his friendship with Malcolm X. And soon after, the Nation began terrorizing Malcolm, sending him death threats and even burning down his house. And finally, on February 21st, 1965, 39 years old, in front of hundreds of people, Malcolm X was shot 21 times, fell to the ground, dead. And that would have been the end of this story. But there's one more person you should meet. Worth Dean Muhammad was one of Elijah's 23 children. In 1961, around the same time Muhammad Ali was getting involved in the Nation of Islam, Worth was sentenced to 3 years in prison for refusing to do his military service. And during this time in prison, he studied the Quran extensively, coming to the realization that his father's religion really had nothing to do with Islam at all. And when he was released in 1963, he began forming close ties with Malcolm X just 2 years before Malcolm was eventually killed. And because of this relationship with Malcolm and his disbelief in Elijah's false prophecies, Worth was repeatedly suspended from the Nation. But at some point in 1974, 9 years after Malcolm's assassination, he managed to mend relations with the Nation and was reinstated as a permanent member. And interestingly enough, just 1 year after being reinstated, Elijah Muhammad died, and the Nation was now left without a leader. Worth managed to take control of the Nation of Islam and immediately began making changes. Worth removed all claims that Wallace was...
So the Imam didn't manage to take control of the Nation of Islam. He was unanimously selected by the ministers. See, this is important that this is history. We can't dismiss history, and we can't allow people to rewrite history, okay? Because this is important. We have young people coming up today, and that we've been blessed to be able to give shahada to, young people, an influx of young people coming into the masjid. And they're interested. They want to know about these things. They want to know how we got to where we are now. We have a Salat class on Sundays where we teach the Salat, and we have to begin at the beginning. Why are we making Salat in the first place? What's the point behind it, et cetera? So I see there's a 281-528. We're going to take your call real quick before we go to the next break. Yes, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum. Ron Foster Sharif calling from Houston, Texas. One of the things I want to put in very quickly is yes. that in the movie Malcolm X, and this is in the interest of assigning what a person done and achieved to the right person, in the movie Malcolm X, the big scene, one of the big scenes was the finger action of Malcolm when he had all the fruit in front of him when they were demonstrating in L.A. That whole power move, it was also adopted to the movie that Regina King put out. She did that same gesture in that cowboy movie she put out. Well, I got great love for Malcolm, love Malcolm. But Malcolm was not responsible, really, for what them brothers did in order when he put that finger out. The person that was responsible truly for that, those men were trained by Captain Ali Rashid, which is probably the greatest captain the Nation of Islam ever had.
Let me stop. You're right about the captain, but it was Yusuf Shah. It didn't happen in L.A. It happened in New York. And Captain Shah was the East Coast captain. And Imam Ali Rashid, or Edward, that he was known at that time, he was the West Coast captain. So the scene in the movie, or in reality, didn't happen in the West Coast. It happened in New York City. But I heard it said that it wasn't the minister who trained the men in the first place. It was the captain. So
yeah.
Also, Captain Yusuf Shah, he told us personally that they had overcoats on and everything, and it didn't even happen in that time of year. It didn't happen in the wintertime like that. So, you know, this is why it's so important that, you know, we just don't let people tell whatever story they want to tell, you know, and put it out there, because the history, if you're looking at if some people dismiss the history. No. If you look at The Godfather of Harlem, which is a very popular series today, a very popular series, and one of the producers is a grandson of one of our pioneers. And I'm trying to let him see that, look, I know Hollywood has their own agenda, and they're telling their story, right? They're showing members of the Nation of Islam who are addicted and wanted to break their addiction being handcuffed to a bed in the basement of Temple Number 7. It's nonsensical, okay? Because they don't want to give credit to the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Anybody can handcuff you to a bed. If that's the thing that broke people off drugs, there's nothing unique or inspiring about that. You see, so we have to tell our own stories. Otherwise, people will come. They show Bumpy Johnson, that's what The Godfather of Harlem is about, the black gangster of Harlem. They show him killing Sam Christian from Philadelphia, who's a real person, okay, who I met. He's a real person. He is from Philadelphia. Bumpy Johnson died in 1968. Sam Christian died in 2016 as an old man. Okay?
I thank you for that correction, brother. But I also want to add finally that I think at some point we should do a biography or some kind of something to honor those two great captains. I served under Captain Shah, but we also should do something to tell the story about Captain Ali Rashid. He was just outstanding.
No question.
And we should do something to honor his legacy and his history as well. The man was a captain in the U.S. military, served in Korea, 2 Bronze Stars, MBA. He was just an outstanding leader. And his story really hasn't been told. And a lot of people on the East Coast only knew him as Imam Ali Rashid. But I think his greatest glory was as a captain. Thank you, brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, he not only was a captain in the U.S. Army, he was an all-American football player, quarterback. Well, they didn't have many black quarterbacks. I knew him very well and was blessed to count him as not only as an imam and a leader, but also as a friend of mine. Okay? So, all right. We have some other important.
As-salamu alaykum. This is your brother, Kareem Hamid, inviting you to join in the study group of the lecture of Imam Waris-ud-Din Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi, broadcast Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. The first hour, we shall play a lecture or address from Imam Waris-ud-Din Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi. And in the second hour, we shall open up the telephone line and share with each other the various beneficial points of interest contained in the lecture or address. So join the study group of the lectures of Imam Waris-ud-Din Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi on the evolution of revolutionary thought and created purpose every Saturday at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time on American Muslim 360. Let's share. Thank you.
All right, we are back. So if there's anyone else that would like to ask a question or to make a comment, if not, we will continue a little bit with our presentation. And here we go. All right. 334-419. State your name and where you're calling from, please.
Again, Michael Hameen, Jacksonville, Florida.
and a question, Imam.
Yes, sir.
Your thoughts in terms of strategies. As you know, the Association of Imam Muhammad, the community of Imam Muhammad, when Imam Muhammad passed away, there was a type of consensus among the imams of his association, you know, we should move after his passing in an independent manner. What I'm trying to think of the terminology. My mind is kind of racing because I want to be brief.
Autonomy.
Yes, that's the word. But with that, we've kind of lost some of our group dynamic, and
yes,
pretty much the regard for shura and the consensus in terms of various strategies. Like I mentioned, the color convention, you know, they came up with certain strategies to identify ways to resist the mob attacks. Frederick Douglass, I think just before the passing of David Walker, he may have had some input, but there were editors of newspapers and so forth that came together. And I'm asking you about strategies in terms of us getting better results in moving forward.
Well, that's a very excellent question. That's a very excellent question. I attended a sectional meeting, you know, after the passing of Imam Warthuddin Muhammad. We had an imam's meeting, a national imam's meeting, two actually, in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, we had a program in Louisville, Kentucky to a tribute for Imam W.D. Muhammad that was very successful. And so we chose Louisville, Kentucky, the home of Muhammad Ali. May Allah forgive him his sins, also again the paradise, which is the home of the Muhammad Ali Museum, which is the only museum in the country dedicated to one man, dedicated to one person. And we attended that as well. And I believe there was at least 100, maybe 150 imams at those meetings. And, you know, you raise a very important point, because there was a bone of contention as to whether we should even meet, whether we should have a meeting. You know, myself and brother, a friend of mine, Imam Vernon Fareed, you know, of Virginia, and Imam Earl Elamine of Baltimore. And, brother, they called us every name but a Muslim for even having the temerity to think that we should float the idea of having a meeting, of us coming together, and accuse us of trying to take over the community and be dictators, etc. So Allah blessed us to come together, and which I thought was a historic meeting. And, you know, and to formulate some ideas, you know, but certainly in terms of going forward with the community, in terms of going forward. But you asked a very powerful question, you know, what should be the strategy? You know, I think the strategy should be, we know that Imam gave us the concept of autonomy, because not just in New York, what I know about New York more is that, you know, us being together under the rubric of Muhammad's Temple of Islam and Muhammad's Mosque Incorporated, those corporations, et cetera. And so with one of the locations that we had in New York, whether it was the masjid in Manhattan, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, where we are, wherever we were, those masajid, if one masjid had a history of debt, whether it was to the Carver Bank or whether they were trying to come after us for water and sewer taxes, which they shouldn't have been charging us because we were a religious institution and nonprofit, and tax exempt, I should say. You know, the imam told us that we should not be tied together in any formal setting, that is, a formal institution like a corporation, so that, you know,
yes,
hurting one of us would hurt all of us.
Yes.
But he said we should remain loosely affiliated. We all knew that he was the leader. You know, he was our leader. And so, you know, I think that we kind of got away from that in the sense that, oh, well, we're not tied together. We're not all looking to Chicago for direction. We're not sending our charity to Chicago as we used to do, et cetera. And, you know, we took autonomy in terms of handling our legal affairs as, hey, we're not even connected anymore.
Yes.
And that's very unfortunate, very unfortunate. And in New Jersey, we met in Jersey City, but you know the Council of Imams of New Jersey is a very strong council, and this is something that we have to come together and meet together. The imam said we should never come together for a big meeting like the Muslim Journal, the Muslim Convention, or the Ramadan sessions without the imams taking some time to come together and meet.
Well, not only the imams, but you know, we're getting closer to seeing the need for, as he promoted, institutional leadership. And I offer as a strategy, and it's not my unique idea. Someone else suggested it to me, that the imams could identify those four birds, those four areas of social life development: education, business, culture, governance. And each imam in our association could identify a particular leadership focus in those areas, institutional areas, so that we could better focus our energies on developing the institutional life of those four areas, you know, solidify them on the hills or the mountains, you know, rather just floating around in the air as aspiration. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that question. It certainly inspires us to look into it further. And inshallah, we will do so. So please stay in touch with us.
Thank you.
Yes, so we're coming down to the wire. We have about 3 minutes of airtime. If anybody else would like to ask a question or make a comment, please do so now. Your comments and your questions are invaluable and very much needed. We like to know that people are listening and engaging with us. Brother Jamal Rashid has shared with me through text while we're on the air that the callers increase when we come on the air. So alhamdulillah, we're grateful to Allah for that. We certainly pray that we are offering some valuable content. 706-627. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Assalamualaikum, Brother Muhammad. Again, we don't want to forget how Imam Bilal from Philadelphia was charged with the responsibility for the last year to encourage all of us to have a shura in the community, Imam Warwick Muhammad, and those who support any kind of life experience that they got from the life of Imam W. Muhammad, so that we can pool our resources, intelligence, and everything else, and start re-establishing this model community of halal of Islam here in our share of the dunya in the United States of America as a model. We don't want to forget about that. And it was supposed to happen this month, and the month's not over because Allah is Akbar. He does what he wants to do. But we need to remember that the door is wide open for us to come together and have shura on local level, in each other's home, and to come together in a public arena to offer the solution to the world's problem, inshallah. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you. Thank you for that. So we probably can take one more call if there's someone has a short call or a short message they would like to give us. But, yes, we thank all of you. We are getting older. You know, we have to focus on the youth. In his last years, Imam W.D. Muhammad had a youth class that he did on Sundays and that he would not allow any conflict of scheduling. He wouldn't allow any conflict of scheduling to take away from his ability to conduct that class. A lot of the old heads, unfortunately, is still the case, you know, are not going to change much. But we have to focus on the youth, you know. And we're giving them, that's why it's important that we give them this history. They want to understand. They're confused, you know. I was listening to an old video of my beloved friend, Imam Qasim Ahmed, may Allah forgive his sins and grant him the paradise. And he was talking about how they did a survey asking people what was their perception, what did they think of Islam when they mentioned Islam, what did they think of? And the first thing they said, a lot of them said Farrakhan, okay? And so, you know, it's important that people understand this distinction between, you know, what our belief is and the teaching of the Nation of Islam, which is continuing on with Mr. Farrakhan, you know. So history is important that we get it straight, we get it right, because these people want to know. These young people want to know, you know. And if there's a difference, what is the difference? What is it based upon, et cetera? What is your belief? You don't believe that God came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad? Well, give us your concept. Give us the concept, the pure concept. You know, give us the pureness, the pure understanding of Al-Islam, you know. So we thank all of you for listening. We thank you for participating, and we pray that you have a blessed Juma, and that you continue to keep yourself safe and healthy, you know, that your families remain safe and healthy. And so until next time, assalamu alaikum.